Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hello and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast. It's Thursday, May 21st, episode 140. If you're keeping count today, what's the Volvo EX60 really like to drive? And we have pricing around the world. The reveal of the Mercedes-AMG GT four-door coupe. Watch out, Taycan. There's a new game in town. And the Rivian R2 configurator has gone live. And of course, much, much more. I'm your host, Martin Lee, from the EV News Daily podcast. Joining us today, if you're watching us, you'll see on screen already, Alex from Out of Spec Renew and Dominic Yoni, longtime EV journalist and host of YouTube's Drive Electric with Dominic. Let's get into it.
Grizzly. At Grizzly, we believe charging your electric vehicle should be simple, reliable, and affordable. That's why we design, engineer, and build our chargers in Canada, ensuring top-tier quality and performance. Powered by United Chargers, every Grizzly model is crafted in-house, built to withstand extreme conditions, and tested for reliability. Recognized by leading publications for its performance and value, Grizzly delivers both durability and intelligence with heavy-duty aluminum enclosures, premium output cables, and smart charging features like scheduling, usage tracking, and OCPP compatibility with multiple charging apps. Grizzly. Simple. Reliable. Affordable. Built for every climate, every EV, everywhere you go. Visit grizzly.com to learn more.
All right, thanks for joining us on the Batteries Included podcast. Alex, as I mentioned in the intro, you basically run Out of Spec Renew, one of the genuinely interesting YouTube channels where we're entertained and informed. Tell us, for anyone watching or listening who doesn't know exactly what you do there, can you fill us in?
Yeah, so I do. I actually own an independent EV repair shop, and I film a lot of the different repairs that I do in the shop for Out of Spec Renew. And yeah, that's basically the gist of it. I do all sorts of different repairs: high voltage system, powertrain, battery packs. That's kind of my specialty.
Interesting. Now, you're also happy to talk about new EVs as well, of course. We asked you to join us today because you are among the very few who have driven one of the very new top tier of EVs. BMW iX3, 500 miles. Mercedes-Benz GLC. Of course, all the Chinese stuff that charges quickly. But the Volvo EX60. 500 miles on WLTP, EPA, okay, that's less real world. We'll make our own mind up when we got all the review videos in. You have a full review on Out-of-Spec Reviews on Out-of-Spec Bits as well, where you go through the interior and software. Fair to say, I think it's gone down quite well. Now, Dom, did you want to remind us about what Volvo's offering here in terms of the specs? Anything on screen, or do you want me to just run through the details?
Sure, no, I don't mind. As Alex knows, we have the Volvo is built on the SPA3 dedicated EV platform, 800-volt architecture. They're producing it in three different versions. There's a P6, P10, P12. So the P6 has a, and they all have different size batteries and different power outputs. So the P6 is a rear-wheel drive with an 83 kilowatt hour nominal battery up to 307 miles range. It's rear-wheel drive. delivers 369 horsepower, hits 0 to 100 kilometers an hour in 5.9 seconds. So I imagine the 0 to 60 is a bit lower, 5.7, I'm guessing. Alex, you can correct that later if you have that number. The P10 is all-wheel drive, and it has a 95 kilowatt-hour nominal battery, up to 322 miles of range, and it puts out 510 horsepower, 0 to 100 kilometers an hour is 4.6 seconds. And then finally, the P12 all-wheel drive, it's like the top gear kind of performance-y model, and long range. It's got the big battery, 117 kilowatt-hours for 400 miles of range. It's a dual motor all-wheel drive, 670 horsepower, and goes 0 to 100 kilometers an hour, that's 62 miles an hour, in just 3.9 seconds. And of course, they have a peak DC charging speed of up to 370 kilowatts. So it's a 10 to 80% charge in just 60 minutes for the P6 and P10. The P12 takes 19 minutes, so a whole 3 minutes extra for the extra 100 miles of range, basically. So, yeah. So that's about, those are the numbers. So, but what's the experience like? I mean, those are just numbers. What's the experience like, Alex?
It was great. So yeah, at the drive, we got to drive both the P6 and the P10 versions. The P12 won't be coming until later this year. But yeah, I got to drive both the P6 and the P10. And yeah, had a fantastic time driving both of them. Super quiet. I mean, probably one of the quietest cars that I've ever driven, for sure.
Is that because the car is so well built, or have they got some funky noise cancellation headphone equivalent stuff going?
They do have some noise cancellation going on in the car. And yeah, I mean, this was my first press drive event, so I haven't gotten to drive a whole lot of the other competition. But yeah, I mean, it was so incredibly quiet inside. You don't hear the powertrain at all, even under, you know, heavy acceleration. Usually you get like a little bit of inverter whine. This, it's basically dead silent.
Wow. And so the interior, I don't know if it photographs poorly, but it doesn't look as maybe plush as other Volvos or Polestars. So what's it like in person? Because they have gone down this road of pulling technology back and only presenting it when it's needed. And of course, photographs don't tell you how comfortable the seats are and what the ride is like and all those nuances that you have to drive a car and you're lucky enough to have driven it for us. So what's that feeling like?
I thought it was quite nice. They had two different interiors on the cars that we drove. So the P6 car that I drove had the wool interior, which is kind of an option that they offer on them. And then I believe the P10 had the Nordico, which is kind of their synthetic leather material, which was also really nice. I think for the US spec on the Ultra Trim, we're going to get the Napa leather by default rather than Nordico. The Nordico will be standard on the Plus Trim. I thought it was, really nice interior. All the materials felt really premium. It was really a fantastic time. The screen in it is, you know, kind of just the right size. It's not too big, not too small. And it's actually kind of hard to tell on camera, but it's actually slightly curved. So, and it uses their new centralized compute system. And they've got Google Gemini as a sort of a chat assistant in the car.
Did you get to try that out? Was it active when you tested it?
It was active. They didn't have it fully featured. It is supposed to have all the features usable, you know, when the car is, you know, available for deliveries, which I think that's starting, you know, basically now, more or less. But it did work for a lot of the functionality. So like you can ask it to change the temperature and, you know, unlike past voice assistant systems, if you're, you know, trying to get it to do something, you have to use very specific terminology. This, you can just ask it in general terms and it figures it out, since it's, you know, kind of an AI conversational assistant. So,
yeah. So this is on, as we mentioned, their new Volvo, which they made a really big point of, not Geely, not Chinese, Volvo SPA3 or SPA3 architecture, which gives it some advantages. It's designed from the ground up as a software-defined vehicle, so you get to do all the goodness with cutting out those hundreds of microcontrollers and lots of cabling and stuff like that. Probably with your Renew head-on, it's probably fabulously complicated to ever try and do anything, but it's, you know, it's doable. Everything's doable. But could you tell driving it that it's a next-gen EV, or was that what was the experience like?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely felt very next generation, you know, just in, you know, sort of the quality and the driving feel. I didn't really get a chance to test charging and stuff, but it seems like the charging performance is, you know, up there with, you know, some of the best. So yeah, it's definitely going to be a kind of a hot contender in sort of this, you know, premium midsize crossover SUV segment.
Mm. Excellent. Dom, sorry, I've been jumping in.
I was going to say,
loads of questions.
That's all right. I was just thinking that, you know, 10 to 80% in 60 minutes is pretty quick, unless you think about, you know, we've been talking so much about the Chinese cars or the BYD, but the, you know, 5 to 10 minute charging, whatever. So this is like up to three times as long to charge, but it's still, compared to what we're used to in the EV world, it's pretty great, like 16 minutes. In this, yeah, 10 to 80, that's awesome. So you mentioned the wheel a few times in your review. Like, so tell us about that a little bit and what you thought of it.
Yeah, so the steering wheel is a little bit different. It's very small in size, which kind of was a little bit different to get used to. I thought it was kind of nice. I think that some of the other people that were there driving the car didn't like it quite as much. The steering feel, you know, like going around corners and stuff is maybe a little bit on the numb side, but I think that's pretty common for, you know, kind of some of the stuff in this, you know, sort of space. But I thought it was pretty nice. But obviously that's going to be something that's a little bit, you know, everybody's going to have their own opinion on whether or not they like it. Usually I'm not a big fan of flat top and bottom on the steering wheel, but this one's not. So it's not like a big oval. It's still more or less pretty round. So I think it works.
And they famously fixed the problem, which I think officially they never classed as a problem, but on the EX90, where they only put two window switches in, and if you want to do the rear windows, you have to do a toggle, and then crazy, absolutely crazy, on a premium vehicle. It seemed like they were saving like $1.50 or something on that. Those are back. What a revolution. We have a button for each window in the car. Maybe the idea will catch on. But what about the general mix of buttons versus software? Because I can see that they've put the heating on the screen, but that's permanent, I gather. So it's always there. There are some new Euro crash test rules to do with safety where they're going to insist on some buttons. I think the defrost buttons are they up top? By the lights in the top of the, I think it's there on the Volvo. Either way, what was your impression of screen versus buttons?
Yeah, so there's not a whole lot of physical controls in terms of buttons in the car, other than, you know, just your steering wheel controls, which they're kind of almost like a joystick sort of. They move up and down, side to side, and they're, you know, sort of a push button. You do have a physical control for volume, and then, you know, forward and back if you're, you know, skipping tracks or stations or whatever the case may be. But other than that, pretty much everything's controlled on the screen. They do have sort of all the hot button stuff on the bottom. So, you know, sort of your toolbar, for lack of a better term, that's going to have all your commonly used things like your, you know, your climate control and your heated seats and all that kind of stuff. That's all just right there at the bottom. I guess one of the benefits of the voice assistant is if you don't want to go digging through menus, is you can use the Gemini voice assistant to activate different features. So say if you want to change driving modes or something, you should be able to ask it to do that, and it can change driving modes. Or, you know, on the cars with the adjustable dampers, it should be able to adjust your dampers, control the electrochromic roof, do all that stuff. you know, without having to dig through menus on the screen.
But
yeah, basically there's very few physical button controls, which, you know, everybody's got their own opinion on that as well. But I think it works pretty well in the car, the way that they have the software laid out.
Excellent. All right. And you're on the road.
I was just going to say, like, compared to like the Mercedes GLC, which like this kind of competes with, you know, it's a really clean looking interior, you know, not like you said, a whole lot of buttons and stuff. I kind of like this. I don't know. Yeah, it's kind of Tesla-like, but it feels like it's a step up from that, even though, you know, especially with the cloth materials. I just, I don't know. What do you think of just like the interior design of the front dash area?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, you know, kind of a it's a very nice premium feel, but in a, you know, kind of a minimalist, you know, sort of way. They haven't gone, you know, too crazy with tons of trim and stuff. It's done in a way that everything feels nice and looks nice, but it's not over the top for sure.
Right. I think your feet might be kicking something connected to the mic there. It's like booming a little bit.
I was like, is it me? Is it me? No, it might be. Maybe it's Alex.
I can edit it out or something.
That's no worries. So let's talk prices then, because this is interesting. Prices, a lot will be said about where this fits in the marketplace. Let's do US prices. Starting at $58,400, so less than the all-wheel drive BMW iX3 and a lot less than Mercedes-Benz GLC. But of course, there is a new kid in town. We'll talk about it in a minute. Rivian R2. I'm not in a position to go out and spend $60,000 on a car just like that. But this is the perfect car for, I guess, someone like me. I drive a Polestar. It's a short hop to go to a Volvo. I've got two young children. They probably have made it for, you know, I've got plenty of use cases. What were your thoughts on prices, Alex and Dom?
Go ahead, Alex. All right.
Too polite.
Wes and I actually did a video the other day where we kind of did a sort of a pricing comparison between the EX60 and a bunch of the other competition, iX3, R2, GLC. We don't have official pricing yet, but we kind of have a general idea of where that's going to be. And it seems to be priced pretty competitively. The base price is a bit higher than, say, the iX3. But by the time you start adding, you know, all the options that, you know, a lot of people are going to want to have, all that stuff really adds up on the BMW. That's kind of the way, that's kind of their game with that, is they kind of decontent the car with as far as options go, and the base price is a bit lower, but once you start adding in all the features, it adds up real quick.
So this has a lot of the features already included, or do you have to pay a lot of extra for the package? You mentioned this has a great sound system, but I think it's a bunch of money for that, right?
Yeah, so the sound system comes with the Ultra trim. So if you spec up to the Ultra trim from the Plus, you get the Bowers & Wilkins sound system. You can spec it individually, I believe. No, maybe you can't. It is only on the Ultra trim.
Wow. Okay.
So yeah, if you want the high-end sound system, you've got to get the Ultra trim.
That's the Bowers and Wilkins, right?
Right. That's the Bowers and Wilkins. I think the Plus trim comes with a Bose sound system, if I remember right. Not 100% sure off the top of my head, but I'm pretty sure that's what it was.
Mm. Well, I think it's got, as far as I can tell, rave reviews. I can't really think of anyone picking out any negatives from all the first drives that I've watched. So this seems to be a hit for Volvo. Let us know in the comments below. What do you think? Is this a hit with you,
right,
with Volvo? Because, I've gone around the grounds and had a look at all the various automotive journalist reviews that were out this week. I guess the embargo lifted. And everyone's really positive about it. Everyone mentions how quiet the vehicle is, how composed it is. I think one of the reviewers, one of the British channels, the journalist, she's quite short, so the seat's really close to the steering wheel. And she says, you know, it's just me, but the screen's really in my face. It is a big screen, but I think most, she says most people are going to find, be actually fine with that size screen. And just the level of detail, fit and finish looks really, really good on it. Dom, any final thoughts before we talk about the Swedish delivery experience?
So I'm like torn between, like, if I had the money to buy a car, these are pretty interesting options. And like you said, actually, as you're saying, Martin, the Volvo for you, I mean, this would be a perfect car. Maybe keep an eye on that in a couple of years.
Used cars, so like I just
right.
I'm in the loop, the cycle, if you like, of buying used cars. So yeah,
right, same. I'm just thinking, man, this is like the perfect family car for you. But so it's like buying cars is an emotional decision, and a lot of that is driven by appearance. So I'm wondering, like, Alex, in person, what do you think of this? Like the BMW iX3 is, like, in my mind, like a sort of a bit better in certain ways, but you know, a lot of people really don't like the way that they styled the BMW at all. And this is a bit more conventional, I think, but I don't know, like, in person, how did it come off to you?
Yeah. I mean, the BMW definitely seems to have some polarizing looks. You know, some people really don't like the way that it looks. I personally don't mind it, but everybody's got their own opinion. The specs are comparable. The specs are pretty close in some ways, and in other ways, you know, everything's got its pluses and minuses. The BMW has got a lot more range for about the same, for just a little bit more money. So for at least for the first version that we're going to be getting, which is the all-wheel drive xDrive 50, that's going to be over 400 miles of EPA rated range for, I think, about 61.5 is going to be the starting price on that. Where the EX60, it's just under 60 starting price for the rear wheel drive, and it's over 100 less miles of EPA rated range. Charging speeds on them seem pretty similar. The total 10 to 80 time on the BMW is a bit longer, but it also has, you know, so much bigger of a battery. If you're comparing, you know, say a 15-minute charging session, they're probably really close. I would imagine they're probably within 1 or 2 minutes of each other. You know, for if you're adding the same amount of range over, you know, a certain period of time.
Awesome.
But it's pretty interesting. It really just depends on how you want to spec the car up, I guess. You know, what kind of options you want to add on to it. And then, of course, you've always got your preferences in terms of, you know, interior and looks and all that stuff.
Yeah. This is right up my street. I'd have one of these in the driveway, and then one of the new K cars that we're getting in Europe in a few years' time, with these small E car regulations that looks like we're getting if those cars come to the UK as well. Basically, the Japanese K cars. So, you know, the new small. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I saw a picture this week of a Rivian parked in London, by the way. So I just slipped my mind that, of course, the Rivian R2 is like a competitor in this class as well.
A lot cheaper. Rivian. So I'd like to see Rivian R2 on UK roads. Rivian R1 on UK roads and Ford F-150 Lightning on UK roads looks silly because we don't have stuff like this. Anything that big is probably a working vehicle or more of a commercial vehicle. We have vehicles that size, but you give them a bit more room and you're like, oh, it's someone, you know, going about their work, or it's a van and whatnot. So R1 series and F-150 Lightning are funny, especially when you see them in London. So R2 is going to be curious to see on our roads. Like an R2 and a small car, or this and a two, even like a Smart 4.2, a used one of those on the driveway. Perfect two-car driveway for me. Absolutely brilliant. Right up my street. Still TBC on voice. I got rid of the Amazon devices in the house, and we went over to the Google devices, and then kind of come full circle. And I've got a couple of them to eBay because we took them out of rooms. So voice, still be TBC on. I do use it in the Polestar, but it's not. It's not Google Gemini. It's not the full-blown LLM that can understand context and human conversation and follow-up questions and things like that. I'm still to be convinced. China, by the way, it's just a no-brainer because people talk to their devices and their cars a lot more, and there's no hurdle. I just feel like a bit of a Wally talking to the car when other people are in. If I'm on my own, fine. But when other people are in the car,
it just feels weird.
Yeah, it feels weird.
Yeah. But,
in China, it's second nature, and it's huge. So this, of course, is a Chinese car, but it's Swedish. It's Chi-dish. So let's talk about the Swedish delivery experience option. Sounds like that could be a nice sweetener on the deal. Alex, what is it?
Yeah, so this was actually the first time I'd ever heard of it. I never knew that it was a thing. But this is going to be the first fully electric Volvo that's built in Sweden. And it's going to be available for Swedish delivery. So you can take delivery of it in Gothenburg. You get to do the world of Volvo experience. And they give you 2 weeks of insurance and registration for European roads. And you can, you know, road trip the car around Europe. And then they, you know, ship it back to the U.S. when you're all finished up. And it's the same price as it would be, you know, if you were to go in and buy it, you know, off of a dealer floor.
Yeah.
It actually, I think, ends up being even slightly cheaper since a few of the, you know, maybe documentation fees and stuff aren't charged. And Volvo, you know, pays for your flights to and from Sweden. And it seems like a really cool experience.
Yeah, absolutely. This is very Ferrari, isn't it? Because Ferrari will charge you to deliver the vehicle to your driveway, or say, well, you can just come and get it from the factory for free, and we'll give you the big VIP tour. And so if I was buying this, I'd say, absolutely, get me to Gothenburg, because I could drive it home, and Europeans could just drive the thing back, which saves the delivery and makes it seem like very VIP. And of course, they're saving a car being, that's the hassle for them. Genius. Absolutely love it. And again, could be a deal breaker if you're kind of into Volvo and you want to go to the factory and get the experience and see the museum, the experience center. That is really cool. Bidirectional ready, whatever that means. Well, we know what it means, but bidirectional isn't turnkey. Yes. So
did they talk about what you need to support bidirectional charging there?
It's going to be, go on.
No, they didn't really talk too much about any of the bidirectional stuff. So yeah, that, we didn't really get a lot of details on that.
Vehicle to load is a no-brainer. Every EV sold now should have vehicle to load. It's a bit like, one pedal driving, which the ID Buzz gets for model year 2027. Welcome to the party, 10 years too late. It should just be a no-brainer. Vehicle to load should just be in every single EV. Vehicle to home, vehicle to grid, little more complicated, but we are waiting on that turnkey solution where you can choose. Well, we have one national grid here, but lots of companies that sell on top of it. So we're just waiting for, well, you choose your provider and you buy the car, and there's a set of standards and you have a bunch of wall boxes that all work, and it's all just working. We're not there yet, but we will be. But it's ready. It's ready for it when that arrives. All right, this is good. How far in are we? 26 minutes. All right, we'll do a quick bit on this next car, then we'll take a break and hear from Tom. The all-new Mercedes-AMG GT four-door coupe has been revealed. Watch out, Porsche Taycan. Production version of the all-new Mercedes electric had its official debut in Los Angeles, actually. They turned the iconic 6th Street Bridge into a mini autobahn. Platform-wise, AMG.EA, setting new levels of performance for the brand. I will run through them really quickly, and then we'll get your thoughts on this. Battery, 106 kilowatt hour. Platform, 800 volt. Cylindrical cells, NCMA architecture. So if you can find yourself a 600 kilowatt fast charger, we're tripping over those, aren't we, on every street corner, you're doing 11 minute charge, 10 to 80. But hey, chicken and egg. I'd rather have the car that's ready for it, and then the chargers arrive. WLTP range would be between 370 and 435 miles, depending on configuration. EPA, of course, not official. So tri-motor setup, one motor on the front axle, twin on the rear. A quick couple of specs. The GT63 4MATIC, the all-wheel drive, is almost 1,200 horsepower, 0 to 62 in 2.1 seconds. It's 0 to 60 in 2 seconds, and it'll go on to 186 miles an hour with the optional pack. There is also a GT55, which is a pedestrian 2.5 seconds. Series production begins in the summer this year in Germany. So it's bigger than a Taycan, bigger than a Panamera, actually. A big old Grand Tourer. No prices, but I suspect if you have to ask, you can't afford one. If it's 150 or 200, if you just winced, yeah, that's cars not for you and I. It won't be the biggest seller, but we love halo cars, pushing technology to the very limits of what it can do. Alex, you live beside a racetrack these days, so if one of those turned up at out of spec, would you fancy a go?
Oh yeah, I mean, it seems like it's going to be a pretty spicy car. So it's definitely got the specs going for it. It's definitely something else. The looks are interesting, to say the least. It seems like quite a car.
A big old Grand Tourer. Don, what do you think? Thanks for showing those videos, by the way.
Yeah. This is a video that we have on the screen of the launch, I guess, on the 6th Street Bridge. I think he said it had up to 160 miles an hour. I think it had, I believe it was George Russell, Formula One driver, driving it. The regular speed limit there is like 35 miles an hour. So they exceeded that by a little bit. And there's lots of explosions and fire and very splashy for, you know. But it's kind of a neat car. It's like super, way out of our league, I guess. We're mere mortals, but I believe it'll probably start at like 150,000 the GT55 4MATIC with the mere 816 horsepower. But if you want to go, the full beans, it's going to be, I imagine it's going to be over 200,000 and maybe up to, approaching Taycan GT levels, which is what, 250? 225, a lot, so much money. I don't know. But it's a different car than the Taycan. It's got a lot of different character, right? It's more of a, where the Taycan GT is really, lightweighted and really made for, turns, carving turns at speed. This does have rear wheel steering, I believe. So it should be nice in turns, but I still don't see it's got, I think it's like 400 pounds at least more than the Taycan GT. So it should do better. What I find interesting about this is, for one, it's got the actual flex motors, which they were developed by YASA, which was spun out of Oxford University in 2009, and Mercedes bought them in 2021, I believe. And it's a very thin, like pancake looking motor, pretty impressive. A lot of power in a lightweight package. Actually, Munro Live. MUNRO Live YouTube channel. They have a great video looking in. They open it up and they kind of explain, how the layout kind of helps makes it work. It's just kind of fascinating if you're into that kind of stuff. Definitely worth checking out. And then there's also like the battery is quite special. So they've used it was developed by Formula One engineers there in your neck of the woods, Martin. What's it called?
Brixworth.
Brixworth.
That's right. It. Stone's throw from Silverstone Formula One track. So if you are heading to Silverstone this year, or at any weekend of the year, by the way, when they have some track action, there's a couple of ways you can get to Silverstone. But the main way in, you'll be passing Mercedes, Benz, or whatever they are, Petronas, Mercedes, Formula One team at Brixworth. You go past they're on a big roundabout, and they've got all the factories and stuff there. And then you go past Aston Martin, and then you're at Silverstone Racetrack. So, a lot of motorsport engineering happens in this country. We haven't got a huge car industry anymore. Obviously, there's plenty at Nissan in Sunderland and Jaguar Land Rover and much more as well, but not what it used to be. But high-performance stuff, we got lots dotted around that bit of the Midlands.
This thing will charge 10 to 80%. What was it? 11 minutes? Yeah, 11 minutes. That's crazy, and that's because down to the battery mostly, and also, so they did this like promotional stunt with the concept version of this, the AMG GT XX or whatever it was, where they went around that huge circular track in Italy in Nardo. And so they did, I think, about 3,300 miles, which is like the distance from Seattle to Miami, basically, at 186 miles an hour, like flat out, basically, the whole time, except for stopping to charge, which they did super quick, right? And and they didn't have any derating or because of the battery or the motors. And because they, these, like this battery in particular, it's, so it's cylindrical cells, but each one is oil cooled, like separately oil cooled somehow. I'm not exactly sure how it works, but it's kind of interesting. And then it'll be nice to see this. I don't know if it's going to trickle down into like regular Mercedes, you know, cars, but it should, we should find some of this maybe on some future electric AMG cars.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, there's a price premium for that, which, you know, yeah.
But it exists. And once stuff gets invented, it tends not to be uninvented. So I love that. We love Halo stuff. Even if us mere mortals can either afford it nor drive them properly. You see George Russell on screen. I think George Russell also did some stints in that Nardo run in Italy where they did that, you know, 3,500 miles, 186 miles an hour constant. And it didn't miss a beat. Yeah, they're a different breed. Fun story before we take a break. I once, as many listeners to my podcast, you guys know, I'm a huge motorsport fan. And a Formula One driver once drove me around a street, not a street track, but a closed street course in a road car. And it's magic to watch because their feet are just doing this dance and their hands, and it's the wheels spinning, and you're doing unfathomable speeds, and the world is rushing by, and you're thinking, should I have said goodbye to my wife before I came on this press event? And it was all over, and I had a chance to have a little chat with him afterwards, not off the record, but just chatting. And I said, oh, I mean, that's an amazing car. What do you think? And he was like, you know, it's a road car. And I'm like, you've just broken my mind, the speed you were driving it on a street track, a closed street track, but still, it wasn't a permanent course or anything. And he's like, you know, it's slow and it's heavy and I can't turn it. They're a different breed, these people. They are a different breed of human. But yeah, there we go. Let's move on. We'll take a quick break and hear from the man himself, who's on a secret squirrel mission today, which is why he can't join us. But he will fill us in very, very soon. We'll hear from Tom and we'll be back in just a moment.
The Batteries Included podcast is sponsored by EVChargingStations.com. If you drive an electric vehicle or you're planning to, this site is packed with comprehensive charger reviews, detailed DC fast charging graphs, and the latest news from all of the fast charging networks. You'll find real-world testing, easy-to-understand comparison, and deep dives into how different electric vehicles actually charge. Before you buy an EV charger or plan your next road trip, make sure to bookmark evchargingstations.com and make smarter charging decisions.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
All right, welcome back to the Batteries Included podcast. It's great to have our special guest, Alex, from Out of Spec Renew on. In a moment, we're going to talk about used cars because a lot of people, if you like me and like Dom, tend to buy used cars. You know, you new cars are how all cars are bought, basically, in terms of finance. And you have that wonderful warranty period. And if it's a lease as well and it goes wrong, have the car back. It's not mine. There is considerations with buying a used car. And we'll get Alex's thoughts. It's an honor to have him on to talk about used EV buying. The Rivian R2 configurator went live, but you'll have to wait until next year, or at least a little bit, for some things like the cheaper trims, even color options as well. The Rivian R2 is highly anticipated, 200,000 reservation holders, 68,000 in day one. They've now made them plenty of them in normal Illinois, and the configurator opened up. So obviously it's the top trim. All cars, Tesla do it, everyone does it. Top trim starts with forest green held back, I think, until later in the year. And there'll be a purple color next year. But otherwise, not a huge amount on the options list. It'll run you almost $1,000 for a spare tire. So if you were thinking of taking this one, some soft roading maybe, then You might want a spare. Apart from that, not too many things on the options list. That launch package does come with Rivian's autonomy as well. And you can add a few things to this, but otherwise that top trim is where it starts, with the launch package as well. So you get your launch color and the autonomy subscription. Alex, have you run the numbers on this and gone through the configurator? What do you think?
I did play around with the configurator a little bit. And yeah, I mean, very highly anticipated. It seems like a lot of people are, you know, ready to get their R2s for sure. Some of the specs on it, particularly the charging speed, it sounds like maybe it's going to be a little bit slower than some of the competition, but it seems like a lot of people aren't too concerned about that. And yeah, I'm really excited to be able to see these start getting delivered. And yeah, hopefully we'll get our chance to see one hands-on sometime in the not too distant future.
Yeah, the Autospec team there's some R1s in the car park there. Do you think they'll be adding some R2s?
I don't know. That would be a Kyle question, but I think he does have one on reservation. And yeah, hopefully at some point we can get our hands on one.
The dark interior is what it comes with the standard. That coastal interior is a little extra, $1,000 upgrade when they unlock that. Dom, what do you think?
I think I'd be out of pocket $62,000. $62,440 if I wanted the spec one the way I wanted, basically. So I would go premium. I don't really need performance, but I want more than standard. And yeah, the colors, that's showing me a green there. I mean, that's the Catalina Cove. I mean, I'm not even sure about what color, but I'd put that for now. And why not the larger wheels? I kind of like the larger wheels. They always look better. Maybe a bit more sportier handling. I don't know. I do like the light interior. And so there's $1,000. And the autonomy plus, you have to, I feel like if you're getting the Rivian, especially, you know, not this launch batch, because they won't have, you know, the capability. It's not launching with the hardware to enable like the hands-off, eyes-off autonomy that Rivian is promising in the future. So you'll have to wait for the batch that's coming out this fall. And so it's a $2,500 one-time purchase. I think that's kind of a steal. If they can actually do what they claim they're going to be able to do with the hands-off, eyes-off, you know, autonomy package, you know, it's going to be equipped with LiDARs and have, you know, the computer in it puts out like 1,600 trillions of operations per second, which is pretty respectable. Yeah, so total package is $950. I like to have that spare space in the back rather than put a compact spare tire and just keep my fingers crossed. So yeah, for me, we're looking at $62,500 right there, which, you know, is more than the Volvo starts at. So it kind of makes you think a bit, you know, too, because this won't have the range, I think, of the 330 miles of range. Okay, that's
yeah,
right around where the but less than the BMW, right?
Yeah, less than the BMW. I think the BMW is like 434 or something.
Yeah,
430.
If you're all about the range, you know, BMW is kind of the way to go for sure. But like, I've seen the interior of this, and it's just so nice. You know, it's just so nice. I like the Volvo interior, but this has like a certain character that, you know, just speaks to me even more than the Volvo one does. I don't know. What do you think?
This is just such the real deal. And it's also make or break. Yeah, let's say that. I try and rein in the hyperbole sometimes. This is make or break for Rivian. It has to work for them.
And
you know, they've had a lot of funding over the years and made some promises and delivered some incredible vehicles, but you can't build a massive car company on niche expensive products like the R1 series. You have to start there, according to many. So this mainstream, mid-price, mass market has to work for them. All the early review videos that we saw were with this trim. raved about it.
And it's not guaranteed that it will either. Like, if you look at, so there's a Consumer Reports study, and I think it's Rivian is ranked pretty low down on like as far as like things going wrong or, you know, having to get repaired. But it's also, I think right now it's the top, you know, people who, if they, it's the car that people love the most, like they would buy another one. Even despite the whatever issues they have. But I feel like that's not really something that the Rivian can continue with. I mean, I feel like this really needs to be bulletproof because you don't have like the service bandwidth to handle, you know, mass issues, right? They don't have a hugely established distribution network. I mean, they have a fair amount, but not compared to like, you know, our legacy, you know, brands. So, you know, it has to work.
So I've got 20 minutes with RJ mid-June. What should I ask him?
You've got 20 minutes with RJ?
Yeah.
Well, I would ask him. My mind just goes to R3 automatically because
I spoke to his handler last week and said, what can't I ask? Because I'm not here to get clicks or headlines, or it's not the way my business, EV News Daily, as a podcast works. And I'm not here to ask trip up questions or whatnot. And his handler said, ask him anything. Like, can you just send me the topics? But he's not precious. And I said, well, I'm not going to ask anything stupid anyway, because what's the point? So obviously I'm going to ask about R2, how proud he is at that, what it's like building a company up to this moment, because this is a huge moment. I'm going to ask about autonomy and software-defined vehicles in the industry. And I'll ask about China and where the US plays, and that's going to be 20 minutes. But if you have any ideas, leave it in the comments. Let me know.
Robots.
I'm not talking about robots. I don't give a monkeys about robots. I'm not talking about robots with someone as important as him.
He started his own robotics company.
No, I know.
Mind,
look, he's so good at raising money. Obviously, he's so good at incredible ideas, great engineering, and then the bit that Elon's really good at, building the support with the investors. And so obviously his mobility company with Also and robotics as well. It's a huge, it's not as big as Rivian at the moment, but it's a huge part of, I think, where, you know, he's obviously his mind is. But I've also not only got no interest but no knowledge on robots and never want to have. I can quite happily do my own housework. If you have any ideas, leave it in the comments. Let's talk really quickly about European launch this week. We'll mention the Skoda Epic, which is the third of the three brothers, if you like. The ID Polo, which looks very much like a Volkswagen. Gone is all the ID styling, but it's still called ID. But anyway, it's the Polo Electric. Then there is the Cupra Raval, which looks all a little bit spiky. And then there is the Skoda Epic, which is all very interesting because Skoda's all about family practicality and storage and clever design and having really good cubby holes and hooks to hang things on and just being a very useful, practical brand. And they're nailing it, by the way. Skoda's nailing it at the moment. This is the new Epic, so it's their version on that small car. Really quickly, so two battery sizes, WLTP'd at either 190 or 272. There's the 90 kilowatt version or the 105 kilowatt version. DC charging, about 25 minutes to 10 to 80 on both of those batteries. Pricing-wise, starting at £25,000. Maybe a little bit under, actually, £25,000. Maybe it's €25,000 for this. So the two battery sizes for the small battery, the entry price, 37 kilowatt hours for 135 horsepower car, or a 52 kilowatt hour battery for 211 horsepower. You can obviously, on the launch spec, go for the big battery, top trim, add everything to this, and then you're getting into a late 30 something vehicle, which is a lot of money for a small car. But these small cars, from the Polo to the Cupra Raval to this finishes off the triplets, if you like, the new triplets. I think this is really interesting kind of place where Europe's at the moment. This 25 grand and under price point for a small, practical family car. Not going to be tons of room in this, but they've eked out every bit of room they can. It'll happily do a family as their only car, if that makes sense. What do you think?
So I'm not super familiar with Raval and the ID Polo or the Cross, but this seems like a bit more more SUV or crossover like than those? Those ones like strike me as maybe like hatchbacks kind of. Is this like a bit more like rear seat headroom?
I don't know about that, but they've certainly added more of that chunky black plastic around the wheel trims and underneath as well. It's got the little teeth, the little kind of Jeep-esque grille down for the air intake at the bottom, and it's mirrored at the back as well. So they've made this look a little chunky and a little more robust, as it were, compared to the Polo and the Raval, which goes down the Cupra sporty design idea. But this is packed with, I think, enough technology that at this price point you would be suitably impressed, but it's not going to blow you away because it's a 25 grand brand new car.
It's a big steering wheel.
Enough. It's a really big steering wheel, actually, yeah. Enough in this car, I think. A lot on the screen, some physical buttons again because of the new Euro rules. But yeah, it's a really interesting segment that is incredibly popular. Renault 4, Renault 5, and a Ford Puma, Jenny, etc. Stuff like that. I guess, Alex, you know, in the US, just cars that you just don't get.
Yeah, I wish that we had more small, affordable cars. It's too bad that we don't get anything like this here.
We do get it. So this would be, like, this would be smaller than the Bolt too, right?
I think it's smaller than a Bolt. Yeah. But it's got the, you know, heated seats and the keyless entry and the vehicle to load, and enough autonomy to make driving, you know, easy. And I think it comes late 2026. So in terms of customer deliveries, will arrive later this year. And I think the point is with these small cars, is they're all price parityed with the combustion version. Now there's no combustion Epic, but there's a Kamiq, and that again is the same price. So these cars perhaps have a little bit of wiggle room, maybe either way. On some finance deals, might even be a little bit cheaper on a monthly deal. So wanted to mention that. It's the third of the three launches. And as Dom mentioned, the Cross, which is basically the T-Cross, is a bit more of a lifted SUV shape. And I think gets a little bit ignored, but maybe not ignored as much as the ID3 Neo, which is the other new car they brought out recently. So there's a lot of stuff from Volkswagen Group, which has had a bit of coverage, but yeah.
The ID3 Neo is not really getting a lot of attention over there?
No, I don't think so. I think just they're coming with a lot of stuff at the moment, so which was the plan.
Right.
And there's always a news cycle, and that has maybe been a bit forgotten about. That's a really good upgrade. It's not a Golf, and they're being very careful with that name. That'll come with SSP platform in 2028, right. 2029 maybe.
But then, I heard 2030 actually this week.
Well, there we go. The Rivian software partnership can't progress. I should ask RJ about that. Has the VW money been useful? Has he got you some good snacks in the canteen at Rivian? A few extra billion always helps. All right, before we go, because I do have to dash today on the old school pickup run, Alex, let's talk used cars, because while you're here, we can't not talk to you about your expertise of fixing EVs and your take on buying and maintaining used EVs. There's some incredible deals out there, but there's some incredible reliability stories out there. Any EVs that you have top of mind that when someone says to you what's good, that you think, okay, this I can recommend this one, this is relatively bulletproof, and equally, we see you with an Audi, a leaky Audi. Equally, which ones have caused you some concern lately?
Yeah, I mean, every car is going to have, you know, kind of its known problem areas, and you know, there's always going to be outliers too, right? So there, you know, some stuff you might see issues that are not very common, and you know, that's a little bit of that is luck of the draw. But there are certainly cars that are going to have very common failure modes that are, you know, a known problem area. So like, you know, in this video here, we were looking at the Audi e-tron, big coolant intrusion problems on the motors for those cars. They actually did an extended warranty on the motors because of that issue, because it's such a widespread problem.
Wow.
And it's just one of those things where, you know, sometimes, you know, a little bit of research can go a long ways if you're looking at used cars to try and figure out, you know, if there's any known problem areas that you should watch out for, or, you know, maybe you want to avoid a car because it has some specific issues. So there's always that kind of stuff that goes on.
What are the ones you recommend then? Anything that you see that you think this is holding up really well?
Chevy Bolts hold up really well. They have a couple of minor problem areas, but nothing that's like a major, no major powertrain issues for the most part. Maybe some motor failures, but that's pretty uncommon, I would say. Model 3, Model Y, pretty solid cars, wide parts availability for them, and generally pretty well supported when it comes to third-party servicing. There's a lot of shops that work on Teslas. Sometimes it's a little bit harder to get service for some of the, you know, less common, particularly when you look at older, you know, some of the older sort of compliance cars. Sometimes that stuff can be a little bit harder to find third-party service options for. But yeah, Model 3, Model Y, you can't go too wrong with. Obviously everything's going to have its problem areas, but comes top of mind for good reliability. A lot of the stuff, it really comes down to, you know, we don't really know how certain vehicles are going to hold up long term until they actually start to age out. So a lot of stuff, you know, we won't really know what the reliability is like until, you know, 5 or 6 or 8 years down the road when they start coming off warranty and seeing more issues.
So just to turn that around real quick before we go, are there cars that you would suggest don't buy no matter how good the value looks?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say there's anything that you should absolutely not buy, but you definitely want to be aware of the risks if you are looking at stuff that has certain problem areas. A lot of the older Tesla Model S and Model X models, got to be really careful for issues with the motors on those if it's a rear-wheel drive or a performance model. Big issues with coolant intrusion, bearing noise issues, that kind of stuff. Another really common one that's a pretty good, generally fairly reliable car is Hyundai Kona and Kia Niro, particularly kind of the first generation ones, as well as the Kia Soul and the original Hyundai Ioniq. Those are prone to some really common motor issues too. If you stay on top of maintenance for them, that really seems to help with the longevity. The big thing is changing the oil in the gear reduction box on them. I would say don't go more than 50,000 miles between intervals on that, because the oiling system just relies on splash lubrication, and there's no filter or anything, and it's a pretty small quantity of fluid, and it just gets a lot of metallic particulate buildup in it, and then the bearings in the gearbox get worn out, and they can get really, really noisy. And sometimes they can even get to a point where they'll just fail outright, and it'll cause big, big destruction. So you definitely want to avoid that.
Yeah, people sometimes say that, you know, EVs are bulletproof reliability because they have fewer moving parts. And I get that, because you haven't got catalytic converters and regular oil changes and fuel filters and stuff like that. But you still have brake discs or rotors, calipers and pads or drums on some VWs. You still have wheel hubs and bearings and struts and springs and dampers and shocks and anti-roll bars or whatever you call them, control arms, and different countries call different things, but steering as well. So have you seen EVs wearing those parts more? Because EVs tend to, I know I'm painting in broad brushstrokes, tend to be a little heavier. Have you seen those mechanical bits at the four corners wearing out, or are you seeing it all the same?
Yeah, suspension can be a concern for some cars. Usually if it's a pretty well-engineered car, the suspension will be, you know, beefed up enough to be able to handle that. I wouldn't say that I'd necessarily see, you know, suspension issues being, you know, more or less common than, you know, any other car. But all that stuff is just normal car things. There's nothing special about an EV when it comes to suspension and brakes. Some cars are just more prone to some of those issues than others, right? If the suspension's not very well engineered, or if the geometry is just set up in such a way where they have more wear. That's, just another one of those things where it's going to be really, make and model dependent. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's certainly a lot less regular maintenance that you're going to see with an EV, but everything that's got moving parts, still has to have lubrication and be maintained. And, you definitely want to stay on top of that and not skip on the maintenance just, because it has less of it.
Do you ever give third party warranties much thought, consideration?
Third party warranties can be a little bit of a tricky situation. I've dealt with some third party warranties for doing some repair stuff. I've generally had pretty good luck with them. But sometimes a lot of warranty companies will basically try and find any way that they can to not pay out a claim. And it always takes a lot of extra, paperwork and time to get claims and stuff approved. So it's, I would say if you're looking at a third party warranty, you definitely want to do your research on the company and find out, if anybody's had any issues with trying to get claims, on them.
Cool. And is there much we can do ourselves as enthusiasts? Obviously nothing that's colored orange or high voltage, because that is going to be a very bad day if you touch the wrong bit. But is there much you would say to the enthusiasts that they can service their own EV?
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. And I mean, that's a big part of the reason why I do a lot of the videos that I do is, I like showing, how the different repairs go. And, for the people that are handy enough to be able to take on their own repairs, it's totally doable. Obviously, if you're doing anything high voltage related, you've got to keep, safety at top of mind. Usually for anything externally high voltage, as in outside of the battery, so, motors and that kind of thing, there's procedures in place to shut down the car so that there's no high voltage present in those components. Sometimes there can be capacitors and stuff that, might need to be discharged, so you want to be aware of those procedures. But generally speaking, that stuff is, going to be something where if you've got the mechanical skills, it's doable. When you get down to open battery pack repairs, that can be a little bit of a different story, because in those kind of situations, even if you disconnect, your high voltage service plugs and stuff, there's still going to be high voltage present inside the battery when you open it up. So they're, high voltage insulated tools and that kind of thing are absolutely critical.
Excellent. Well, a good reason to go and subscribe to Out of Spec Renew. Watch out, Ed China. Alex is coming for you. I bumped into Ed China at a recent event. You know he's tall, but he's taller than you think.
Really?
And very lovely. And very lovely. They say never meet your heroes. And then you meet people and you go, oh, thank gosh. Thank gosh. Just charming and had time for it. It was an EV event. And everyone wanted their photo with Ed China and a chat to tell him about their favorite moment of either his YouTube video or his TV stuff. And he had time for everyone, which was really lovely. Some big events coming up soon as well. You'll see a lot of coverage of the Goodwood Festival of Speed coming up. That's going to be in the UK, as always, on the South Coast. So anyone making their travel plans for that, we'll try and keep an eye on that for you. There's going to be some EV related stuff, plenty actually, to talk about over coming weeks with that coming. Hey, I think we'll put that one in the books. If you have any questions or comments, leave them on the YouTube show. Go and check out Out of Spec Renew. Get in contact with Alex, and he'd love to hear from you. And if you like the show, then make sure you hit thumbs up, because it helps build the podcast and helps others like you find new EV content to watch. Thank you all very much for joining us. And we'll see you again very soon. Hey, Dom, say ciao.
Ciao.
You big tease.
I can't hear anything.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.